The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to Plan Your Estate Radio with your host, San Jose Estate Planning Attorney Bob Bergman. Bob's been practicing law for over 40 years and is certified by the State Bar of California as a legal specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law. Bob is here to help you set your house in order with valuable insights you can use today to prepare a better tomorrow for your loved ones. And now your host for Plan Your Estate Radio, Attorney Bob Bergman.
Good afternoon, Bay Area. Bob Bergman here, broadcasting from my office here in the Cambrian Park neighborhood of San Jose. I wanted to start off my show today by recommending to anyone out there who wishes to get an education about just what estate planning is and what we're trying to avoid doing proper estate planning and what we're trying to achieve doing proper estate planning. I do have two webinars that are accessible through my website at lawbob, that's L-A-W-B-O-B .com. You can go to that website and you can see on the first page there, you'll see watch an estate planning webinar. If you click on that, it will take you to a page in my website where you can see the two webinars that I offer at this time, and then you can decide which one you want to register for. You could, of course, register for both if you'd like. I will tell you ahead of time, the webinars are about 1 hour long, but they cover pretty much everything you could want to know about living trust planning, probate, avoidance of probate, avoidance of conservatorship, special planning if you have minor children, what my process is, and then the various levels of trust-based estate planning that I offer through my practice, and then what my fee structure is for all of those. Now, I am in the process. I realize asking you to set aside an hour to watch a webinar in this modern era sounds crazy. I trust, though, that many of you who want to get an education are willing to set aside an hour to actually learn about estate planning and the benefits of estate planning before actually making a decision to go ahead and do it. Hopefully, at the end, you'll realize it's not something that you should try to do on your own because it is a specialty in the law, and it could be very, very detrimental to a family to try and do estate planning on your own. There's so many things that can go wrong when people try to do estate planning on their own that I heartily recommend against people trying to do it on their own. Now, I'm in the process, and it's going to take a while, probably take me a couple of weeks to get it done, but I'm taking my webinars and I'm breaking them down, and I'm also going to repurpose some of them in short 5 to 8 minute topic-based little mini webinars that will also be able to be accessed eventually through my website at lawbob.com. I'm going to cover probably topics like what is probate and how do we avoid probate? What is conservatorship? How do we avoid conservatorship? How do we do special planning for those that have minor children? And probably some other topics, including likely one video that is nothing but what I offer for the various levels of trust plans that I offer and what my fee structure is for those plans. So I'm going to be cutting away possibly a lot of the exposition. And I don't know how many little mini webinars I'm going to have, but if you want just to learn about a specific topic, you'll be able to do that once I get those up and running on my website. And if you, if after watching a couple, you realize I need more information than this, you can always go and watch the full webinar in order to get the full information from me. So that's something I wanted to let everyone know, is that I'm in the process of updating and refurbishing my my webinar offerings, including coming up with some mini webinars. And I will probably add other little webinars in there about the special type of court petitions that I do, the trust petitions that I do in court, and some other topics as we go forward. And eventually there should be a whole list of them that you can easily watch, and or watch, you know, one piece at a time, just to make it a little easier to take in. I understand people are busy. People don't have a lot of time. And I appreciate that. At the same time, I think that a good, solid education about these topics is very important as well. So I'm going to suggest that people still actually watch the full webinars if you have the opportunity to do so. Now, as I sit in my office here, I have a lot of ideas as I'm going forward to kind of restructure my practice in a number of ways. I'm considering bringing back 15-minute consultations that people can sign up for through my website, even on estate planning, although I much prefer that people watch my webinars and then decide that they're going to work with me and schedule a preliminary planning session. I recognize that, again, not everybody has the time or the inclination. They maybe just have a couple of quick questions that hopefully someone like me can answer. So I'm going to likely be bringing back my 15-minute consultations. And I will say that if you do book one of those 15-minute consultations, it really is a hard break, because it's very likely that I have a I have another appointment that is coming up right after whatever you book. So at 15 minutes, I will have to say goodbye if we're on a Zoom meeting, or ask you to leave my office at that time if you come and meet me in person. I apologize. I'd love to be able to spend a lot of time with everybody who comes to talk with me, but I don't have that luxury. I have a lot of people that I'm trying to help, and I have a lot of people that I am helping every week, and so I have to be very careful how I utilize the limited time that I have every week to actually meet with people and see if there are ways that I can assist them. So going forward, the new appointments, and I'll probably be updating my appointment system later on today, will likely be 15 minutes for just an estate planning consultation, 15 minutes for a probate or trust administration consultation, and this will not affect those who belong to legal service plans such as LawPoint through CompSych or CLC Incorporated, who are entitled to a 30-minute consultation with me as part of me being a providing attorney for those legal service plans. But for everyone else, it will likely end up being a 15-minute time slot to actually meet and talk with me. So we're coming up on the first break of the show today, and when we come back, I will pivot to my usual approach, which is questions and comments from around the state of California. And what I do is I retrieve these from a number of different places, and I bring them to you so that you can hear situations, live situations that people are dealing with here in California, and how I might approach advising people in the hope that you will become better educated going forward. This is Attorney Bob Bergman, host of Plan Your State Radio, and I'll see you after the break.
This is Plan Your Estate Radio with San Jose Estate Planning Attorney Bob Bergman on AM 1220 KDOW.
Hi, welcome back for the second segment of the show today. So let me pivot over to questions and comments from around the state of California. So let's see. The first one I have here is out of San Diego. And it's fairly complicated, but it does raise issues that occur fairly frequently throughout the state. So it says, if someone is domiciled in Texas but dies in California after staying there for years, which state deals with probate? So the person said, my mother suddenly lost her husband. They used to RV full-time and they're domiciled in Texas. When their health got worse, they joined a trailer park in California but kept the address in Texas. He died in California and his death certificate was issued in California. A lot of their mail went to Texas and was forwarded to them, but they got some mail locally in California too. They had two bank accounts, one in California, one in Texas. She's unwell and can't really travel. I don't think they had separate property. This just happened, so we're still sorting out the paperwork. They're not super wealthy. He had no will, and their IDs show that they're in Texas. He has children from another marriage, and from what I read, this can have a huge effect on her share of the joint property. Do we have to go through Texas for his estate? Well, this is what's called a choice of laws question. And ultimately, it's going to come down to, likely Texas, because if they're domiciled there, their IDs are from there, they still have all these contacts there. I would actually want to know, where were they filing their state income taxes? Because typically where you file your state income taxes indicates where you intend to be domiciled. So just saying they were domiciled somewhere doesn't necessarily answer the question about were they actually domiciled there. That's just one of the realities of how the domicile laws work. So there's a lot of different moving parts here, and I will say I think it's probably going to end up having to be probated in Texas, which could be, it sounds like, a problem for the family member that is now facing having to probate in Texas when she's in ill health and she lives here in California. Sacramento, California. Is a trustee of a trust legally allowed to distribute the final disbursement of trust funds without the agreement of all beneficiaries regarding the accounting? Short answer is yes, but you run the risk if you do that not all beneficiaries agree with the accounting, and they may challenge the accounting. So the follow-up is, what recourse do beneficiaries have if they disagree with the trustee's accounting and believe it is inaccurate or incomplete and unfair and retaliatory. I'm not really sure what retaliatory means here. Well, the recourse is they can take the trustee to court and be prepared to have the trustee present the accounting and what the accounting's based on, and then be prepared to somehow dispute the accounting or come up with contrary evidence or opinions of value, or whatever it happens to be. Can the beneficiaries challenge the final disbursement of trust funds if they believe it's based on faulty or misleading accounting provided by the trustee? Yes. Refer to my just immediately prior answer. What steps can beneficiaries take to protect their interests and ensure that trust assets are distributed fairly and in accordance with the terms of the trust? Sounds like we're going to court again to have the trustee provide an accounting that is satisfactory to the court. That's what it sounds like to me anyway. Let's also talk about, are there any legal requirements or procedures the trustee must follow when distributing trust funds, particularly when there's disagreement? Well, I would say what the trustee should do is petition the court to approve the accounting. And then if there's a beneficiary that has an issue with it, they have to show up in the court and show why they have an issue with the accounting. And if nobody shows up to contest the accounting filed by the trustee and asked to be approved by the court is likely going to approve the accounting, even if there's beneficiaries that think it's wrong or inaccurate or they don't think it's fair or whatever. Because if they don't show up in court, then they have given up the right to complain. That's why in a case like this, if I was representing the trustee, I would probably say, okay, are you confident in your accounting? Yes. Was the accounting prepared by working with a CPA and everything is verified? Yes. Well, then, if you know that they're not going to agree with it, then what you probably need to do is petition the court to approve the accounting. And what that'll mean is you go to the court, you file the accounting with the court. It's now public record, which is something you were trying to avoid. But because people were complaining about it, they're kind of forcing the issue and forcing you to actually go into court and have the court actually approve the accounting. So that's likely what I would recommend, is get the accounting approved by the court. Okay, now, we have one more, I think, before the mid-show break, so let me take a look here. Can a trustee take a loan against a property to buy out one of the other trustees? This is out of Oakland, California. The parents died, left a trust, and three siblings in charge of the property. Two of them borrow against the property to buy out the third trustee. He was told the money's out and they're paying service fees to the bank. They're waiting for me, who is the third trustee, to sign so the deed will no longer be under the parents' names. Yes, actually, that can be done. Sometimes that is the only way to, nowadays, to preserve a parent-to-child transfer under Proposition 19, is to have the trust obtain a loan against the property so that a beneficiary gets cash instead of an interest in the property, and then the property can be transferred from the trust directly to the other child or children so that it counts as a parent-to-child transfer. This, of course, is assuming that child or children are resident in the property and using it as their personal residence. So, coming up to the mid-show break, more Plan Your Estate Radio in a few minutes. This is attorney Bob Burton.
This is Plan Your Estate Radio with San Jose Estate Planning Attorney Bob Bergman on AM 1220 KDOW.
And welcome back to the third segment of our show today. Out of Ontario, California, this is going to be a pretty easy one. Person said, my brother died in June 2023. He owned a home in Phoenix, Arizona. He was not married, had no children. What can I do? He had no will. He lived with his girlfriend, who also died in January of 2024. What can I do about the home he lived in? Well, let's start with the assumption that your parents are not living, and the assumption that you don't have any other brothers or sisters. If that's, and you say your brother had no children, that means that you're probably the intestate heir under the law of pretty much every state in the country, and I'm certain that it would include Arizona. What this person's going to need to do, depending on the value of the property and depending on whether or not Arizona has a simpler procedure than a full-blown probate to actually take over the ownership of this property, that would pretty much depend on whether or not they have some kind of a small estate procedure for real estate that's of a certain value. Can't tell how much this property's worth, so it's kind of hard to ultimately answer the question. But that's likely what the person is looking at, is doing a probate in the county where Phoenix is located, which I believe is Maricopa County in Arizona, and actually doing it that way. Now, here is an interesting one, because assuming that the information is being reported, that is, it is correctly being reported to me, there's a serious issue raised in here. Okay. Person said, San Francisco, California, my dad never got married. I'm his only son. He added me as his only beneficiary on all his bank accounts, savings accounts, 401k account, and his life insurances. All these accounts together are a huge amount of money. I asked the bank's manager, what happens when the time comes, if these accounts need to go to probate, even if I'm the only beneficiary? And the manager said, if the accounts go over $150,000, yes, the accounts will need to go to probate. I thought if I was the beneficiary on them, it didn't have to go to probate. Let's stop right there. The bank manager has no idea what he or she is talking about. If an account has a designated pay-on-death beneficiary on it, by definition, if the owner of the account dies and the paid-on-death beneficiary is still alive, that account does not go through probate. The reference to the $150,000 is a reference to a probate code section that dealt with when you would have to go to probate, and that was if you had assets, the total value which exceeded $150,000. But that's not the number anymore. It hasn't been the number for quite some time now. The actual number is $184,500, and that means you have to have assets in your name or payable to your estate that altogether are valued more than that amount. Not each individual asset, but the aggregate, and by definition, not assets that have a pay-on-death beneficiary on them, where the beneficiary is alive when the owner of the account dies. Now, this person went on to say, my dad now wants to do a living trust because he and his brother own a property, half and half, and my dad wants to leave his half of the property for me. So the bank manager's wrong. My recommendation would be to avoid having having the property end up going through the probate process, even inadvertently, because the child does not survive the parent, the recommendation I have would be that they do set up a living trust, that they transfer his 50% interest in the real estate he owns with his brother into the ownership of the trust, that he transfer the bank accounts into the trust, that he keep the 401k naming his son as the beneficiary, but then name the new trust as the backup or secondary beneficiary, and the life insurance the same way. Son primary, the trust as the backup. Now, if he does asset protection planning for the son in his living trust planning, which if there's a lot of property there, it might be a good idea, I might actually recommend that the trust become the beneficiary of the life insurance policies so that those proceeds would pass into asset-protected trust for the son. That's what I call the castle trust planning. And if you've listened for any amount of time, either since I came back in the air back in January or in the previous 5 years I was on the air on the station here, you know that the castle trust planning is designed specifically to make sure that we actually have asset protection for the assets that are inherited by a child, typically a child. So that is kind of what I have to say about that. I think it's not all that complicated, but I will say the bank manager completely dead wrong with that statement. And the bank officer was also giving legal advice to the bank customer. And I am pretty sure the bank manager was not a member of the State Bar of California and had not consulted at all with the attorneys in the that the bank has in their and certainly did not consult with their trust department, if they have a trust department for the bank. This just highlights that just because someone is in a position of authority in a financial institution or is in a position of authority as an expert in a field such as a CPA or a real estate broker or something like that, it doesn't necessarily mean they have any idea what they're talking about when it comes to estate planning, wills, trust, and probate. Okay, out of Riverside, California, we have an interesting one here. Person asks, by any chance in California, is it best to let a revocable trust continue after the settlors or grantors of the trust are deceased? And if so, how many more years? Well, I'll start first by saying that if the creators of the trust, the settlors or grantors, are deceased, it's no longer a revocable trust. It's an irrevocable trust and is now at least one separate taxpayer, depending on how the trust was set up originally. But in general, you should not keep that irrevocable trust around longer than it's necessary to carry out the terms of the trust to distribute the assets. And the reason for that is pretty straightforward. The reason is that you do not want to have this ongoing issue with an undistributed trust, especially if beneficiaries die along the way. That can create tremendous complications. It can create actually issues where a beneficiary died and now their share of the trust, since it was not turned over to them and they couldn't do planning for it, their share of the trust may now have to actually go through the probate process to get to their heirs. So I do never recommend that you keep the trust around longer than it's absolutely necessary to finish the administration and distribute everything. Okay, let's see. So here's someone who said, I want to drop my spouse, who I'm divorcing, as trustee of my disabled son's trust. He's not the father of my son, but he is named as successor trustee of the trust. I'd start first with, does the trust itself provide a means to change the trustee of the trust? Start with that. If you're the current trustee and it says that, I don't know if the trust is irrevocable or revocable. It could be either way with the disabled son's trust. But if there's no mechanism for removing somebody in that position of authority as a trustee, then you may actually have to go to court and petition the court for that reason, based on the fact that the person was going to be your ex-spouse and is not related to or the parent of your disabled son. Proper drafting on the front end would avoid having to go to court, but what I've seen is often there is not proper drafting at all in when it comes to trust planning of various kinds. So we're coming up on the end of our third segment of the show today. And when we come back, I'll take it home with a few more questions and comments from around the state of California. And I will also maybe share a few closing thoughts before we close out the show for today. So this is Attorney Bob Bergman, host of Plan Your Estate Radio. And I'm looking forward to talking to you for a few more minutes after the break today.
Now, back to Plan Your Estate Radio with Attorney Bob Bergman.
And welcome back to the final segment of our show today. I'm going to cover a few more questions and comments, and then I'm going to switch to basically an offer to extend out to you and the general public there who belong to organizations that want to get better educated about estate planning and what it is and what the benefits are. Okay, let's see. Here we go. This might actually use up the rest of things here. Okay, San Jose, California. Question about QDOT, which is Qualified Domestic Trust, estate tax, and Survivor's Trust B. Says, my husband passed away in late 2023. We had a trust established, and the terms of the trust state that there is a Trust A, the surviving spouse's trust, and a Trust B, bypass trust, be established. The Trust B bypass trust would be the assets of the husband that died in late 2023. Are total assets less than the federal estate tax exemption when my husband died? They have about a $3 million estate, which is well below the federal estate tax exemption. First question, do I still need to make the two trusts if no federal estate tax is due? The requirement to make the two trusts is a function of the trust itself, not if there is a federal estate tax due or not due. So the short answer is, yes, you have to create the two trusts unless you take action to request permission from the court to modify this trust so that everything can pass to you as the surviving spouse, Trust A. That's assuming that if you have children, the children would be agreeable with this and that there's not going to be anybody who would object to modifying the trust to reflect that. This is called a trust modification petition under Probate Code Section 15403. I do several of these every year. So this person in San Jose, I may see if I can contact them and suggest that they check out my website that I have, irrevocabletrustdoctor.com, that explains what can be done and explains the approach and also gives paperwork that people can fill out if they want to consult with me about that. Second thing was, person said, I'm a U.S. resident, which tells me a resident but not a citizen. My husband was a U.S. citizen. Do I need to establish a qualified domestic trust for Trust B, the bypass trust? The short answer is probably not. If the trust itself says that a QDOT has to be established, it may be that's another thing to add to the list of requests to make from the court that it not be a requirement. A qualified domestic trust is for assets inherited directly from a spouse when the person inheriting is not a U.S. citizen, but they're a U.S. resident. And it's basically, without going into a lot of detail, it basically has to do with a non-citizen spouse inheriting and inheriting marital property as part of the marital deduction, which means it's not estate taxable at that time. On the other hand, it's possible for the husband's share of the estate to go directly to the non-citizen spouse without the marital deduction being involved at all. That's using the husband's estate tax exemption amount, which would be more than adequate to cover this. Third question is, do I still need to file an IRS Form 706, which is the estate tax return, 9 months after my husband's death, even though no federal estate taxes are due? The short answer is no, unless for some reason you thought you needed to claim portability, which is basically preserving his unused estate tax exclusion to be used in the future when you die. Not very likely with an estate this size. But again, no absolute answers without meeting with somebody, going over the situation, showing them what their options are, and then letting them decide what it is they'd actually want to do. That's pretty much what we're talking about here. Now, I only have about a minute and a half left to go on the show today, and I just wanted to let everyone know out there, if you have a company you work for or an organization, such as your church, temple, synagogue, mosque, that would like to have someone like me come in and talk about estate planning, and put on one of my seminars live, I'm available to do that. Just send me an email at rpb@lawbob.com and give me a little bit of information about your organization, and we'll see what we can set up. Now, I do ask that they be within 15 miles or so of my office here in Cambrian Park, so not in San Francisco, not up in Oakland, things like that. It's kind of far to drive for me to go, but I would consider up to 15 miles away from my office as a place to actually meet. So that's it for the show today. This is estate planning attorney Bob Bergman, host of Plan Your Estate Radio, and I hope you have a great rest of the week, Bay Area. Goodbye for now.
You've been listening to Plan Your Estate Radio with estate planning attorney Bob Bergman. For more information on today's program or to schedule a consultation, visit lawbob.com. L-A-W-B-O-B, lawbob.com. Or call his office in San Jose, 408-247-0444. That's 408-247-0444. And be sure to tune in next week for more Plan Your Estate Radio with attorney Bob Bergman.
Opinions expressed in the preceding program do not necessarily represent the views of the ownership, staff, or management of this station and are for informational purposes only and should not be construed to be legal, financial, or tax advice. Seek appropriate legal advice regarding your particular situation. Attorney Bob Bergman does not offer any guarantees with regard to the outcome of your legal matter. Prior results in other cases do not guarantee a similar outcome in your case. All rights reserved.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.